Every sports fan recalls with amazing accuracy a pivotal winning moment involving a favorite team or player. Yet lost are the stories on the other side of these history-making moments. The agony of defeat. The athletes who experience not transcendent glory, but crushing disappointment. The cornerback who missed the tackle on the big touchdown. The relief pitcher who lost the series. The world record-holding Olympian who fell on the ice. In the new book, Losing Isn't Everything, sportscaster Kurt Menefee examines a range of signature disappointments from the wide world of sports, interviewing the subject at the heart of each loss and uncovering what it means months, years, or even decades later. Again, the name of the book is Losing Isn't Everything, The Untold Stories and Hidden Lessons Behind the Toughest Losses in Sports History. Kurt Menefee is the longtime host of Fox NFL Sunday, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, Kurt.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to a project that would have you look about losing?
Well, I think there are multiple things. And one, I'm fascinated by people and how they respond to tough times. And I think, obviously, you look at sports 50% of the time, you know, you're going to be on the winning side, and 50% of the time you're going to be on the losing side. It's just the nature of sports. And for those that win, you know, we see they get to say, hey, I'm going to Disneyland. They do all the commercials and they get the accolades. But I often wonder, whatever happened to people, especially famous big moments that lose? I mean, do they just recede into the woodwork? Do they disappear? And especially also when you look at for athletes, so many of them, when they're at the peak of their careers or in their early, mid, maybe late 20s. So you've got another 40, 50 years of your life to be a productive citizen. Yet maybe your most famous thing that you're known for is someone who failed on a big stage. So I wanted to kind of explore that really from a psychological standpoint as much as anything else, just about how losing and being known as someone who lost impacted their lives, their future, their relationships, etc.
You certainly learn in the book that there are a lot of variables, but one generality is that it sticks around with you for a long time.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a great quote from Pete Carroll about it. You know, who's the coach of the Seattle Seahawks? They won one Super Bowl and then trying to win back to back, lost to the New England Patriots in the last 2 minutes on an interception down at the goal line. And Pete says, "Look, this will never not be with me." You know, but he also says that, you know, you've got to address it, be honest with yourself, what happened, why it happened, what your role is or was in it, in an effort to try and move forward so that it doesn't negatively impact you for the rest of your life. And he didn't want not only that loss to negatively impact him, but also the players on that team and the people in the organization. So one of the things he tried to do was address, you know, the loss itself immediately and right away in the days following. And to explain to the team, you know, why they made the decisions they made and what happened. And, you know, that sometimes you do what you believe is the right thing and just the results don't fall your way. It doesn't mean that the process was wrong.
In the research and in looking in these stories, so let's use the Cleveland Indians as an example. When do you think it really starts to sink in as to what happened?
You know, I think that's one of the interesting points, too, because it varies so much. I mean, it's like life. It's athletes are humans. And there are a bunch of human beings who respond to different ways, in different ways, to the same result sometime. And so we've got people in the book, you know, like Calvin Schiraldi, who was a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. And, you know, I found him interesting because he lost games 6 and 7 of the 1986 World Series. But everybody remembers the ball going through Bill Buckner's leg, which he had. I mean, Schiraldi blew a 1-run lead, then he blew a 2-run lead. Before anything ever happened to Buckner. And Buckner is the guy that the history points at, but simply because we've seen that videotape over and over and over. But if you go back and you look at the game, Schiraldi was the guy who really lost games 6 and 7. And he struggled with that, not only that year, but in the years to come, even after baseball. And here we are 30 years removed from 1986, and he just began therapy back in 2013 because his wife essentially said, you know, we're going to get a divorce if you don't go get some help for this. Because for 3 decades, you've been carrying around this burden. And then you get a guy, I mean, so that's someone who's carried it with them forever. Then you get someone who, as I was saying, with Pete Carroll, who tries to address it and move on right away. Jean Vandevelle, who's a famous golfer in 1999, led the British Open in par as four, and on the final hole, all he needed to do was get six, which is two over par. Couldn't do that. Monumental collapse, and even in the golf world, just about any time a golfer blows up, you know, it's referred to as pulling a Vandeveld. He said he got over it the next week, that he was fine. You know, he moved forward. It's just sports. You realize there are more important things in life. And so the response varies. And one of the challenges of the book that I wanted to try and explore was to find out, okay, we're all human, and so it does vary, but why? Why are some people able within 1 week to get over it, whereas other people, it takes them 30 years to still deal with it? What is the difference in the way they responded in the immediate aftermath? Did that have an impact? Were they impacted by their upbringing? You know, what was it that allowed some to move forward faster?
Tell us about Rodney Harrison and the helmet catch.
You know, Rodney Harrison was the defensive back, the safety for the New England Patriots on the famous David Tyree catch, where he catches the ball on his helmet, led to the game-winning touchdown by the Giants back in Super Bowl 42, which was the year the Patriots were going for the perfect season, and they had the lead again down in the last 2 minutes of that game. And Tyree makes the catch. Harrison was the defender, physically didn't make the play, said he thought he had swatted the ball away, saw that he caught it and saw the replay and just couldn't believe it. That bothered him because he made a physical error. But what bothered him even more was four plays later when the Giants scored the game-winning touchdown, he made a mental error that he was responsible for calling the Patriots defense. And the coaches sent in from the sideline that we have to run a blitz on this play. And he looked over and he saw the matchup. It was a 5'9" defensive back against a 6'5" wide receiver, Ellis Hobbs against Plexico Burress. And he said he knew at that point that they had no chance, so he should have called off the blitz. But he didn't in that case because Junior Seau was a linebacker on that team. And Junior had helped bring him up when he was a rookie with the San Diego Chargers, when nobody else in Rodney's mind believed in him, when it was a fifth-round pick. And he respected Junior so much that when the coaches called a blitz in, Rodney said, hey, let's not run it. And Junior said, yeah, let's go. And he's like, no, let's call it off. And Junior's like, no, let's go. And he respected Junior so much that he gave in to what he knew probably wasn't the right thing to do in that situation. The Giants wind up scoring the game-winning touchdown. There ends the Patriots' perfect season. And it wasn't that he's blaming Junior, but he blames himself for not sticking to his guns as the guy who was the play caller on defense and saying, no, we're not running the blitz, because he feels that he let down not only Junior, who didn't get to win a championship, but other players and other people in that organization and Patriots past and future, because they had a chance to make history.
I was struck by an Olympic story that you have in the book, Mary Decker, because you think of these young athletes, and of course, in all sports, perhaps if you're playing a team sport, it's game after game, and there's a lot of things that can go right, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong. But in the Olympics, you are working 4 years to get to that moment, and then something horrible can go wrong.
And for Mary Decker, it was really more than 4 years. In 1972, she had the time to qualify for the Olympics, but she was too young. You had to be 14 years old in order to qualify, and she was only 13. So she did not go as a member of the U.S. Olympic team in 1972. In 1976, she was one of the fastest women in the world, but she had leg problems with her shins, I believe, and so she did not make the 76 Olympic team in Montreal. She made the team. She didn't get to go and run. In 1980, the U.S. boycotted the Olympics, so she didn't get to run in that. So this was a buildup, really, of 12 years before 1984 came, and she was finally able to run in the Olympics. She gets in there, and what bothers her more than anything else, and took her a while to get over, was the fact that she felt that she got in there and the moment became too big. But she was a world record holder. She was one of the fastest women in the world, obviously, but she got into a race and ran differently than she had ever run before. She always ran at the front of the pack, this time because her coach had explained it to her, and as she said, well, you have a coach for a reason, and I'm in the Olympics, and I wanted to win a medal. So I started to listen to my coach. It was in my head. She ran back in the pack, wound up getting tripped up by Zola Budd, who's running on the British team, falls down, tears a muscle in her hip, doesn't even finish the race. And that was, you know, after 12 years of waiting to get there. And so it was a heartbreak for her for that moment, and it took her a little while to get over it. But she said eventually the next year she came back, and she set 11 world records and got right back to it. But she never, ever really got that chance again to win an Olympic medal because something, it seemed like, always was in the way.
The last chapter of the book is entitled Redemption. You tell the story of Dan Jansen. Not all of the athletes in this book, of course, get that chance of redemption. But when it happens, how important is it to them?
You know, it's funny because you would think Dan Jansen is the one guy in the book who's failed, and then he puts it all together mentally, emotionally, and physically, and winds up winning a gold medal in his third Olympics and the last race of his career. And part of it was, he said, mentally he put everything else aside. You know, before he had always thought how great it would be to be an Olympic champion, and that became the predominant thought rather than just going out and skating your best race. He was famous because he fell in 1988 after his sister passed away the morning of his first race, and he physically fell down in Calgary, and that kept coming up. And he said he also felt, talking to psychologists, that he had a mental block, that he really, parts of him didn't want to succeed because he was afraid that people might think he didn't care about his sister since that became known. So it's amazing how the mind can control the body. But when he finally won, it turned out it was great, it was a relief, it was important. But as he looks back on it, he says it was the most important thing in his life. And he thinks that maybe you can overvalue winning sometimes, and that he goes around and he gives speeches and he makes sure that whoever the coach is or the person in charge asks him to come in and make a speech, that they know that his lesson is that, look, it's important. It's one of the most important things you're doing. You're striving to be the best at what you are, no matter what. But it's not the end of the world. And so, you know, there are more important things in sports. And I think the irony is that for a guy who chased it year after year, and you talked about how rare it is for the Olympics, and then finally achieved it, it turned out to be, it wasn't the biggest thing. It was the most important thing to him in the end, which I think even he was surprised to find out.
I was just thinking about this, but for your job as a host of Fox NFL Sunday, you're on that set with all winners, right?
Well, yeah, they've all won Super Bowls. You know, I always make the joke, we've got 8 Super Bowls combined.
Yep.
I have 0, you know. So Terry's got 4, Jimmy's got 2, Howie and Michael have 1 each. But they've also had their share of losing. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of one of the points, is that, you know, this is a lesson that we all can learn, because as an athlete, you don't win every game you ever play or every match you're ever in. You're going to lose sometime, and sometimes you lose on a big stage. Well, in life, we all have that same adversity, whether it's at home, you know, with the family, or one day at work. We have things that we all have to overcome, and I think there are lessons that can be learned from losing, about bouncing back from adversity, about perseverance, about continuing to try and strive to get to whatever goal we're trying to reach. And I think that a lot of times, you know, people look at it and they think that whatever happened to them today is the worst thing in the world, and, you know, my God, I'll never get over it. But you've got to find a way, because the sun keeps coming up tomorrow. Life goes on, and you can't say, hey, 20 years ago I had a bad day at work, therefore I'm allowed not to be productive for the next 2 decades. It just doesn't work out like that. So how can we better ourselves, and what can we learn from those people? And that was my point in the book.
The book is really fascinating. It's Losing Isn't Everything, the untold stories and hidden lessons behind the toughest losses in sports history. It's published by Day Street. Kurt Menefee, great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, Kurt Menefee, host of Fox NFL Sunday, is the author of the new book, Losing Isn't Everything. It's published by Day Street. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.